Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Aloha.
Yo.
Justin Robert Young.
I jumped over my introduction. I was so excited to be
Well, the two of us were just saying hello to each other as we do, as we clock into work. Time to make the content.
Hey, fellas.
Now say hello to Bryce Brushwood.
Bryce
Brushwood.
Bryce Brushwood. Hey.
A little announcement. I was premature on here.
Sorry for cutting in early. I was just trying to keep the bit going.
Bryce Brushwood would be my younger, cooler brother. It's just like, man, we can't all be Bryce Brushwood. Some of us have to be Bryans, all right?
What's up, bro?
Now that I've, made a perfect bungle of an introduction.
It does work better, too, because Bryce is only one syllable. Like, Brian Brushwood is for...
I'm a better superhero name?
No. But Bryce Brushwood is that nice, tight, three-syllable thing. I'm going to change my name to Bryce. And it's not because you have that name. It's just because it's objectively a better name.
You have to get it
name.
With an I, though.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
So, gentlemen, first, let's talk about the pros and cons of going on the Joe Rogan podcast. To clarify the air that you're erratic. People think you're erratic, a little out of control. So maybe just go on the Joe Rogan podcast for a couple hours, have a nice...
Oh, I have not watched it, but I've heard so much chatter about it. Save me the time and just tell me what it was like.
No. If you have not seen the clip, Bryce, please cue up the clip that wound up sending the stock into a bit of a
convulsion. Which it's recovered from, by the way. I just point that out.
Sure. All I'll say is this, but Andrew and I had a conversation the day it came out, and I was just like, nothing good can happen. There's like almost nil that can happen of you going and doing the Joe Rogan podcast. The only thing that you should ever be talking about talking to Joe Rogan is if you happen to be ringside at a UFC event.
Or is it a cigar?
No.
Okay.
It's marijuana inside of tobacco.
Okay, so it's like posh pot tobacco
You never had that?
Yeah, I think I tried one once.
Come on, man. You probably can't because stockholders, right?
Probably can't because the stock will go down.
Like, I dare you. I dare you. Why don't you lose millions of dollars of valuation?
Get upset at you if you do billions. Certain things. There's tobacco and marijuana in there. That's all it is. The combination of tobacco and marijuana is wonderful. First turned onto it by Charlie Murphy and then reignited by Dave Chappelle. There you go.
So, there you go. Elon Musk took didn't exactly look like an expert toke there.
Is it possible that I'm trying to draw some parallels here. I wonder if all of this erratic noise from Elon Musk grants him some freedom in that, in the same way that the noise we get from President Trump does. Like, there's so much noise that everybody loves to latch on to. And if you've already decided you hate Elon Musk, then he's like, fine, guess what? I'm gonna feed you on the reg something to be outraged about once a week forever going forward. But if you are, comfortable with me as a figurehead and captain of this ship of commerce, then you're not going to care about any of this noise, and so you don't mind that I'm doing it. Is it possible that both of them are attempting to make the same kind of play?
The only thing I would say is that for Trump, there is a world around politics that is media driven. And certainly there is such about business too. The difference is that with politics, a lot of it is just kind of opinion driven. That is not meant to be necessarily like there's not financial stakes necessarily. Certainly there are financial stakes to the president saying something because the president is an 800-pound elephant that can't do anything without affecting anything. But what's interesting about Elon Musk is that there is him as a pop culture figure for which doing the thing every week makes you the biggest star, or like, you know, we have not seen a person like Elon Musk, because every time he, you know, dates an actress or a pop singer or goes on the Joe Rogan podcast or calls somebody a pedophile or something, he is introducing himself to a new sector of the world that, unlike us, is new to the Elon Musk game and is like, oh, wow, and he does this? Oh, I didn't know that he did this. I thought that the Tesla was made by Ford, and, like, I thought that SpaceX was just a code for – it was the new NASA. Like, now I know that this guy does a thing. So there is that, but also there is not only this business world where his stock is batted up and down by whatever is happening in the news, but also there are people that are financially incentivized to see it go down. And so you are – that's why this is a insanely volatile situation, not to mention the fact that he's kind of crossed into politics in that, you know, people have political opinions about him, and they have tied it to him either in his brief, albeit brief, part of some of Trump's business councils, or, you know, whatever you want to make of the, you know, union situation with Tesla. Like, there are – he's basically like if you were to put him at the center of all the Venn diagrams for which – Elon Musk does a thing that it affects. It is like the logo for the Apple photos. Like, it is just a million different circles for which he is the dot at the center.
You know, it's I think to Brian's point, like, yeah, I think that you're kind of, you reach a point where you're like, I'm gonna do me. I can try to make you all happy, but I probably will fail every now and then. But if I just sort of do me on a regular basis, then it's just going to become kind of noise. I watched the original Iron Man. And one of the things that was kind of, you go back there, like, Tony Stark's this guy is always in the tabloids. He's a genius heading a company, but he's like all over the place with his behavior. And of course, that's a comic book, but it's also a comic book based on an archetype like Howard Hughes, you know, a person who was a very real person who did very erratic things, was also brilliant in this. And Elon Musk ain't Howard Hughes level crazy. You know, Elon Musk is kind of like, you know, a guy dealing a lot of stress in ways that perhaps we wish he wouldn't do. But, you know, as far as, you know, the quality of what the product is, you know, we watched a SpaceX rocket perform admirably last night. He's hired an amazing team. He works with, you know, some of the most brilliant people in the world. I love my car, you know, like, that's there. They're meeting part of the stress we've seen is him pushing himself to meet these production goals, and not because he was in Ibiza partying too much and then, you know, this embarrassing photo surface. This is, you know, we're seeing manifestations, I would say, of stress-related behavior.
Man, that's the other thing, too. Like, imagine there's already, I think, a fair portion of listeners right now that would be uncomfortable with the level of scrutiny that the four of us have on this podcast. Imagine that at all times there are enough eyes looking at you, and every move you make affects millions of dollars, billions of dollars of venture capital. Like, can you imagine how profoundly isolating that experience could feel? And if you were of the ilk that it's like, I don't want that level of scrutiny in my life, like, that sounds positively traumatic, even to my ears.
Yeah, and, you know, there's this, he's a public figure, and it's a responsibility of journalists, reporters, bloggers, whatever, to cover and to discuss these things and to investigate. And that's absolutely part of the job, was you're that public to do that. But I would say for him, the frustrating factors we talk, you read the headlines where they're not these objective headlines. It's like, you know, these, you know, very personally insulting kind of things that go beyond the facts and personal opinions and stuff. And granted, these are from people who often don't know anything from anything, but that's the hard part, is that on one level you have to accept, you got to accept the scrutiny. But then when you get this sort of, this people you've never met or whatever have this, are absolutely just bashing you, I can't imagine what that's like. You know, I think about, like, what would I go through if, like, somebody read one of my books and decided to interpret it in a different way and wanted to just say horrific things about me? You know, like, if they had a public platform, that would drive me nuts. And I can deal with criticism right now, because if I get, if this random people get up, like celebrities that get upset on rando Twitter people, like to me, that's why. Why? Yes, anybody can have a Twitter account. Anybody can say anything, and to let them scare you off Twitter seems silly to me. But when you're looking at people with bigger blog platforms, things like that doing it, then that would be stressful.
So, and that's one of those things where I think Twitter, we've talked about this before, like Twitter is when you, or I thought Twitter is when you want a chat room, but you only have the ability to make press releases. And when you have an asymmetry of power, when you have somebody way up, the person barking down here, making noise, trying to get a reaction, you know, the troll or whatever, they perceive themselves as so far down that it's like nothing I could say could actually affect. But meanwhile, the person up here doesn't perceive himself as being that much higher. And as a result, it's very strange. Like to them, they're in a cool clubhouse called Twitter, and somebody, you know, who is supposed to be their friend is not talking like a friend. And so they respond the way you would and would be appropriate in a casual conversation or whatever. But of course, the perceived asymmetry of power changes everything.
We are, none of us were, I mean, there are people now that are coming of age that were born in an era where social media, the rules of social media had at least had a first draft, right? The majority of us listening to this show right now did not. We are all writing it on the fly. Like, we are all understanding what this kind of stuff means, but, you know, look, there's no doubt that the asymmetry of power creates for lonely and at times perilous and dangerous situations. I don't know if I've ever talked about this on any platform, but when Ashley and I started dating long distance, the reason why it took, we had the long running joke that we were like platonic friends, right? And then we became platonic roommates. The reason why initially that started was because she was, understandably upset that, like, if we all of a sudden weren't seeing each other and we both have public internet facing personalities, that the next time she were to post a YouTube video, she would have fans. Because she doesn't know who. I mean, I'm just the guy that she was dating, right? The breakup could go poorly. And next thing you know, I'm like, hey, you want to know what? Spam everything that she does on the internet. And that could be bad. There is a lot that can go wrong. And there's a loneliness to that. There is a loneliness to the idea that once you understand that there are consequences for your every public move, that's a problem. Now, take that situation. Again, this is like the first year of like an NSFW show on Dragon Con and Ashley's, you know, a fairly genre-specific YouTube fame, and multiply that by the escalating national debt clock. And you have what it goes on with something like that, where, you know, Elon Musk is trying to beat back short selling vultures for Tesla, and he's got Azalea Banks talking about how him and his girlfriend are racist on Instagram stories that makes its own for its own cottage industry for the pop culture fans of Elon Musk, the real life Tony Stark guy who don't know what the hell he really does. This is now an element of his life that he has to deal with.
I can't imagine that kind of scrutiny, but I'll tell you, like, not really to him, but sort of interested. We've watched a couple high profile people depart from Twitter or social media platforms because they complain of the criticisms and just the pervasive attitude. And I'm not gonna name names, but I would say in both cases, you read their Twitter feeds and they're part of the problem. They're awful people who, you know, or mean and nasty towards other people. And then when it gets directed at them, you just see how thin skin it is.
Yeah, I guess I perceive it a little bit different. And this is one of the things that I really enjoyed about Ryan Holiday's work with Trust Me, I'm Lying and certainly Conspiracy, where it's like, it's not that they, I think that people might be in general good, but they respond to market incentives, and the market incentives are to serve the outrage industrial complex and figure out a way to phrase things or take for granted untrue things in such a way and present them as a way to generate interest and clicks or whatever. And I think that when that same spotlight that they're shining on somebody else, and again, that perceived asymmetry of power, they feel like, oh, I'm exposing the dark underbelly of this billionaire, whatever. When it's shown on them, I think they realize in a very personal way the horrors of what they're participating in, and they don't like it. But of course that doesn't stop them because that's their job. They have to keep shining the light to get the clicks and phrasing things in the most outrageous way possible.
I also think that part of it is, and again, this is my largest fascination of the generational difference and understanding of social media, is that everybody who was born before social media, and really I think for a lot of the elements of the internet, the most fascinating parts were permanence. That now everything I did and said would be there forever. And so if you have somebody that, let's say, theoretically, science fiction scenario that we live in politically charged times, and that you feel like you need to be on the right side of history, because somebody is going to look up your permanent record at the moment that the thing happened, and they will look to see who was the person who said the thing at the moment when it needed to be said, and who beat back the tide of the baddies at the moment when it was supposed to happen. And that's what's important. And so you get things that I think if you were to remove context from it and say, hey, is it cool when you have such a larger platform that you just eviscerated a stranger and called them names and said awful things about them? Do you think that that's a good thing or a bad thing? Is that an element of society that you would like to amplify about yourself, or is it one that you would like to apologize for because it is one of your baser instincts? And they would probably say, out of context, yes, no, I want to show kindness. I want to be somebody who moves the world forward in how I deal with people personally. And yet when it becomes this, no, but this is every tweet becomes the 99 theses that I'm nailing to the door, then, you know, no one's going to criticize me when I'm right. This is the moment.
Well, so, that's just we get the pleas for civility and the pleas for, hey, we need to, you know, aim high, and then immediately we aim low. Well, they didn't do it, well, they were playing dirty, so now I have to play. Like, that's the whole point of aiming high, is if somebody plays dirty, you say, hey, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep my head up, and I'm not going to fall to that level. But if you're just waiting for somebody else to play dirty so you can play dirty or go that place, you never meant to play aim high. You never had the intent to actually try to be noble or take higher ground.
So the here's a fun idea to wonder about. I'm not married to this. I'm just feeling it out. I wonder if until about 20 years ago, all of humanity had the benefit of allowing, because we know that you can scrub and massage your memories and feel like this narrative thread of consistency comes out, right? So it's like, you know, maybe somebody's racist back in the 1960s and now it's the 1980s and they've evolved their perceptions and they're able to massage their memories in such a way where they can sell themselves the line that it's like, well, I've never been racist and I've always blank. But then the only people who couldn't do that are people who had committed their thoughts, their genuine thoughts, to paper during that time, which basically meant, you know, editorials, the press, a very, let's say, 0.01% of the populace was actually committing in a public way their thoughts about things in the press. And it feels like, as a result of social media, we're all in that clubhouse now, and we all have to cop to the things we actually said and did. And we're only just now having social media around long enough for us to look back and say, like, oh, the world has definitely changed. And I used this word for a transgender person 10 years ago, back before it was contextualized the way it is now and before it meant what it means now. And I don't get to say, no, I never did that, or no, I never thought that, or no, I never said this thing or whatever. But instead, my hope is that as a society, we learn to stop deciding or stop acting as though people are flash frozen or as though they're one person consistently through their life, and instead say, yeah, that was a different guy. The world was a different place. And I would like to think that we get to a place where we forgive people or it's more culturally acceptable to just say like, hey, man, I don't want to be judged with what I said and thought 10 years ago or 20 years ago or so on.
Thank you, Harvey Weinstein's defense attorney.
I mean,
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's of course the slippery slope, right? Is that at some point, like, where do you draw that line?
Well, no, and the point is, your point is like, well, and you think, and that's right. Where Weinstein did things that were bad, and we knew were bad, and all that. But that was he used that. Well, it was a different time, you know. Women didn't have rights. I'm not pretty sure they did, Harvey. but you're right. Is it if you've been at obscurity before? And that's one of the things now is that you have, you know, take, you know, James Gunn, where he said things before he was with Disney that were clearly not Disney things. But also, he's a very active guy on Twitter. There's a reason why he got targeted, because he's, you know, and exercising his right to free speech, but, you know, became a lightning rod for things. Then it's like, well, look what you said here. And when nobody was really giving you the kind of attention that you have now. And now this, you know, has that effect. And you think about how many people do we know, how many people in this podcast have said jokes in private that if somebody caught on video or tape right now and aired them, we'd be doing, you know, the apology tour and like, no, really, Hitler was bad.
jokes in public, jokes that are still on YouTube. Like, look, there's. I've always known that if there was ever a point where I wind up working with another larger company, that I am one YouTube compilation away from no longer having that job, just based on the idea that, you know, I've tried to spend the time on the internet being funny and you know, be somebody that thoughtfully kind of went through a progression, you know, however much I realized it going forward. But at the same time, the only thing that I would say that I personally use as my religious guiding light on it is A, to not deny, right? To understand that I've walked this path and I've made a choice to walk this path publicly. Number two, to understand that there are changing ideals and I have changed, but that means a commitment to understanding what that means and understanding why things are wrong and why people would think a certain way about them. And then beyond that, to let the chips fall where they may, you know, and to just be kind to people, be understanding, listen to people if they are hurt, and, you know, do the best that you can, because I don't think that there's really much else that you can do. Like we are, I mean, geez, I went out of my way to create an awful paper trail of trying to do a comedy show on the internet that was recorded forever, but at least I went out of my way to do that as an adult, you know. At least I didn't grow up my entire life putting literally every thought I would have ever had on social media in a way that is probably more searchable than anybody wants to let on. Like, you know, I wrote a few things on a GeoCities site when I was in high school, but beyond that, everybody, this is going to be the rule, not the exception, that every awkward phase, we're seeing it now with, it's funny because athletics is one of those things where you go from high school to public figure really fast. You know, you go from sophomore year to now people are assigned, adults are assigned to cover your every move. And there's a reason why we see increasingly over the last 2 years, every one of these athletes, you know, that all of a sudden, every crap tweet, every time you've quoted a rap lyric, every time you've repeated some joke that your idiot friend said, now is a gigantic.
Well, and we saw that when Trevor Noah took over the Daily Show, and it was like all of a sudden it's like, okay, now the spotlight goes on this, and let's see what the outrage engine demands.
Yeah, yeah. Tally Zarell pointing out that I played an old stand-up CD of mine where I drop a word that I would not drop in common conversation anymore. And you know, despite I can go back and dissect why I made the joke and what I was trying to get at and where my the point that I was trying to point it at it. But like, look, I was an inexperienced 19-year-old who there's a reason why I didn't continue my stand-up comedy career. I said something awful. And that's that.
So let me ask you a question. So let's say next week you get cast on, you know, the new ABC show, you know, talking lies about podcast, yeah. A family of podcasters, whatever. And you're the crazy, you know, you're the fun uncle, whatever character does the show. Great. You're hit. You're getting movie offers. Like, forget Charlie Day. Let's hire Justin Robert Young. Right. Yeah. And then season two comes out. Hey, we just found this audio of Justin Robert Young saying horrible things in a comedy show. And all of a sudden, the usual suspects of blogs, the outrage machine is now against you.
Like, what do I do? Well, this would be my strategy. Number one, the only
explain
way
to me
win
again why you said this about Finnish people.
The only way to win that kind of war is, in my opinion, to out talk it.
Yeah.
I think that A, you have to demonstrate the fact that you have thought about these things more than they have and be willing to exhaust to a reasonable degree whatever you can of misinformed outrage. And then beyond that, you gotta take an ass kicking. Like, you have to go, have the appropriate people explain why you were wrong. You have to show an open heart, and you have to try and have that be a part of you. You have to.
But they're telling Bob Iger to fire you. They're telling Bob Iger to fire you, and you're probably going to get fired.
Look, I'm saying this now. There's going to be a point where if I ever have an opportunity, I'm probably going to get fired from it. Like, I would understand and accept that this is an element of the fact that if we are still in the same phase of the moon that we are in right now, it's just going to be a wrap if it catches momentum fast enough.
I guess that's the point. Like, the apologies don't work. We've seen that. And the problem is there's a lumping in of, hey, here's an audio of somebody making some joke or reference to a friend that's kind of everybody probably said out of context versus here's Michael Richards in a comedy club dealing with hecklers with the most hateful response you could possibly imagine, you know, yeah. And like, you're now with him. It's like, wait a second. You know, this is an angry, angry guy saying something that's just absolutely horrible versus, hey, I was on a stage in a comedy club doing things in a bit that everybody there, everybody's cool with the bit in this time and day. And now I got to apologize for this thing.
I guess to me, the element of it that's important is not necessarily the apology as it is the recognition and, right. And understanding where you are, where you were and where you're going to anybody that cares to understand context. Cause you're right. There's no context to be given to the people that don't want to hear it. And there is no reasoning why, I think, in terms of advanced media kung fu, there is the element of the only way to disarm media is to, make them feel special. And there are things that you can do there. But other than that, if they want a scalp, they're going to try for a scalp. And whether or not it happens, it happens. I think that there are things behind the scenes, right? You can be a good employee to your employer. I would not be shocked if with the James Gunn firing, no matter how much I think it was a weird thing to happen and however much he let himself down that path, that I'm going to take a guess that you don't get fired within 12 hours if you have a super perfect relationship with your employer. I think
where both of your emotional and career bank accounts are filled with trust and respect for one another.
I think if they love you as an employee, they probably give it the weekend to see how it plays on Monday. But beyond that, look, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Now, where we are, we weren't where we are now a year ago. Who knows where we're going to be in a year from now? Who knows where we're going to be in 2 years from now? It might get worse. It might get better. We don't know. Like, again, there is an element of the thing that we are that's happening right now, in my opinion, is that we have just realized the universe is indexable and we are finding, and now there's enough stuff there that we can Dewey Decimal whatever the hell we want out of it, and we can create a great blog post with a bunch of screenshots, or we can create a great YouTube video with a bunch of clips. And the question is now, in a world where that is commonplace, how do we process it? And do we process it in a relatively minor infraction or with context more than we do without it? Who knows?
You know, there is a let me find, see if I can find the article, but there was an article that went on and talked about, like, people who had sort of been just kind of like, you know, internet shamed for things they said, and just kind of like the consequences of that. Like, they had like the whole thing, Justine Sacco, right?
Sure.
You're like, man, you know, that was bad, horrible joke and a kind of a thing to say. And you go like, was the response appropriate to that? It's like, I don't think so.
By the way, fantastic book. So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
That's where it's from.
By John Ronson is
that's where,
amazing.
And that's look, she got that because one of the early times we got a racism mascot. Not only did we get a racism mascot, we got a racism mascot with a deadline, right? Like, that was the difference, the Alfred Hitchcock difference of surprise versus suspense, where it was like this wasn't just a thing that happened. That's surprise. This was a thing that happened, and we knew we could track her flight, and we there was a countdown clock to see what would happen by the time that she landed in Africa. And now it was a proof that Twitter was this live a moment where we could all gather and we could all feel excited that we gathered around a campfire, until we realized that the campfire was a human burning on a gigantic pile.
But it was like, what blog was it that was like, that was the thing, was when the blog started, which just fueled the fire and kept.
It was Gawker. That? I remember it being Gawker, at least.
And that's part of it, is you have this, like, it's like, and that was sort of one of the criticisms of Gawker was sort of, it's like, there, sometimes it went after very public people, but sometimes, oh, the brother of so-and-so. I'm like, this person's not public. Like, why are you, because you don't care. And that was, when you look at, what this woman got put through, death threats, all this other stuff. And it's like, yeah, I get that tweet's an offensive sort of tweet. And it's the kind of thing that you hear people who would never describe themselves as being racist or, inhumane say 1,000 times. And you kind of be like, wait a second, this is, on one hand, you profess these ideals, and you just said this thing. And that's sort of, let's call these things sort of out to a degree. But like, this woman got death threats. She got her photos, doxxed, and the mob thought they were justified because the media is going to do what the media is going to do. But the media's are like, yeah, no, this is okay. This is a bad person. This is what we do to bad people. So let's, let's shame them. Shame them.
Well, and look, I, the media was also, a monkey with a gun. I mean, to me, the
monkey with the gun, Justin Robert Young on the media.
Yeah, I mean, look, at that point, I mean, if we are to understand the blog revolution kind of starts in 2003 or 2004, let's, just put a pin in it. Right. I think that it is, the age of disco lasts until the lights come on with the Hulk Hogan trial. And you realize that there's a limit to it. Like this is like, we can all do all the drugs we want and sleep with whoever we want until we realize that there are consequences. And at some point the music has to stop, because now the power reigned there, in a way that it didn't initially in 2004. In 2004, it was, Matt Drudge and Little Green Footballs taking down the 60 Minutes memo and stuff like that, where it's like, oh, look, it's, David and Goliath is the media, and Goliath is newspapers, and Goliath is television, and Goliath is all this. And then you realize, like, oh no, wait, all that time that we were being faster, smarter, more profitable, now we're it. And old media is shedding and dying and doing everything else. And you can't just be the wild. Now, all of a sudden, that troll on Twitter that's calling Elon Musk all sorts of names, now they're a powerful person, the rules change. You know, the rules are constantly changing. We are in an era of tectonic shifting.
We are the product now, even for the media. We are the product, you know, and you know, one person's private embarrassment now becomes, you know, big. And just that urge to police each other, but to kind of police each other in a way of like, I better yell at them before somebody notices what I did.
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I want to say, for the record, it's all there. Whenever I have something that can be taken away from me, you will know how to take it away. You know, please feel free. Put together the compilation now just so you can have it for when you can take something away from me. Until then, patreon.com/JURY, patreon.com/JuryDaily, patreon.com/WeirdThings, and patreon.com/NightAttack. Because that's Justin, how I pay my bills.
I already got that dossier ready. I've already got it done. That's done.
Yeah.
You know what I hate? People who listen to audiobooks and thinks it counts as reading.
Hey, man, I got a pick. You guys want to do some quick picks?
Yeah, I don't mean that, everybody. I love audiobooks.
I finally gave in to the entire world. And guess what? The entire world was right. And The Good Place is an amazing show. It's just amazing. It's great. It looks like one thing, and then the longer you watch, the smarter it gets, and it's just a blast and a joy, and I'm halfway through the second season right now. It's all on Netflix. If you have read a lot of thought experiment stuff, you're going to recognize a lot of the territory they explore about the human condition, about moral philosophy. It's a blast. I love everything about it.
Cool.
I'm going to guess you guys have not seen it.
I have not seen it. I love everybody involved in it, and I liked Parks and Rec and The Office, and that's Michael Schur's one of those dudes.
Ted Danson is particularly a joy to watch in this role. It might be my favorite Ted Danson role of all time.
What finally got you to watch it? Because I know season 2 just came out on Netflix, so I don't know if it was a recommendation thing.
You know what it was we went out to Hollywood. Casual name drop, I had sushi next to Bob Odenkirk. And then we finished our pitches out there, mm-hmm. and suddenly it was like, I don't know, I wasn't in the mood to do anything. Getting ready to doing a round of pitches, you got to psych yourself up so you can, you know, project a phony version of yourself to a town full of phonies based on phony land. Try to out phony everyone else, you know?
You had a TV show already.
I know. Look, and it was this emotionally distressing last time too. And then it's over, and then you just have nothing emotionally. So I just went back to the room, and I didn't want to do any of the things that I normally do. For whatever reason, I was like, fine, I'll watch The Good Place. And then flash forward to 3 hours later, I'm like, this show's great. Everything about this is great. I'm happy. Mm-hmm. Hollywood isn't phony land.
He's got Gollum going, yeah. Fine, I'll watch it.
Yes, exactly.
And it looks like season 3 comes in like 2 weeks or so.
Dude, I'm so excited. So great.
That's very cool.
My pick it remains The Making of the President, 1960. I found out this. Hubert Humphrey invented the phrase, there are three types of politics, which I thought that I had invented with my show, Politics, Politics, Politics. As it turns out, he beat me to it by about 70 years. So big shout out to Hubert Humphrey.
Wait, making the exact same joke?
No. He said, I'm going to have to memorize this. There are three politics, the politics of business, the politics of party, and the politics of something else. But I'm not for any of them. I'm for the politics of the people, which would theoretically be a fourth kinds of politics. But, who's counting?
I hope it. In keeping with my video game pick from Weird Things today, on the Switch, this just came out, but this has been on PC for a little while. It's a mini tactics game called Into the Breach. This is from the same people who made FTL a few years ago.
Oh yeah,
which was a real time sort of
organizational ship battle game.
Yeah, and so this is very similar. You do these sort of mini tactical battles on these 8x8 grids.
as you are trying to defeat this alien force from invading the planet. And the whole conceit is that you and your space force are time travelers. Or no, like, not, is it time travelers? You can jump between different timelines. And so your goal is to go through all of the various timelines and save the planet, you know, thousands and thousands of times from this evil force. And it's really nice because it's a very simple tactics game to get into. But it's also very short. You know, you're playing on these very small maps and they only last, you know, five or so turns. But they're really dense. You know, you have your own loadouts, but then the enemies have certain moves. And so you can always see what the enemies are going to do next move. And that makes your goal every turn to, like, push them around or stop them, block them, whatever. It becomes like chess-like in that. It's not just like trying to predict what your enemy will do, but knowing exactly what they're going to do and dealing with it every turn. I really recommend it, and it's out now on Switch. The Switch version is pretty good also.
I got to pick, actually, and I'll probably use it again on Weird Things, because it's a really, really cool. So, like, I'm lazy. I kind of sit around doing nothing a lot, and I like to walk at night, but if I don't get a walk at night, it kind of throws everything kind of, you know, out the window. And I went and bought one of those exercise bikes with a desk on it. I bought one that wasn't that expensive just to see, like, did I use it and I like it. And when I did use it, I liked it. So then I decided to get one that was a little nicer, not that too expensive comparatively. I got the FlexiSpot V9, And what's cool about this, it's an exercise bike. It's got a desk, so you can put a computer on it. You can work on it. And it's compact. It doesn't take up a lot of space. It kind of can fold up pretty well. And it also works as a standing desk. So you can slide the top part over and just lean in and just use it like a standing desk. And if you show some of the other photos there, you can see some of the – it is really compact as far as how it folds down. And it's on wheels, so it just slides away. If you're looking at it here, it's nice. It's not a bunch of it looks kind of like Apple made an exercise bike. And so you've got the wheels. You can pull it – you know, you have to a little work to retract them if you want to pull it all in. But you can – you could fold this thing up and you could fit it inside of a closet easily if you needed to put it away. Oh, so wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Puts together in one minute.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't look bad at all. And like I said, it works as a standing desk. So that's the other part of it too, is that you can, if you want to stand and work, you can use this and it's, you know, helpful in that. So FlexiSport, the version 9, it's $400, which, you know, pricey, but not as pricey as those things normally can get. And if you're looking for, like, hey, I'll just put my computer here or whatever, for, you know, I've got a video projector in here where I can just sit it down and watch something for 20 minutes or whatever, like that. Nice. And the time flies.
Yeah, because I mean, you're basically getting a recumbent bike. Mm-hmm. And also a desk. So
yeah, and it doesn't look bad at all. It looks, I had another one, which I just gave away to somebody. They lived like a block away, and I said, oh, you need to pick up, bring your car. And this woman shows up, and she has this tiny little wheeled cart. I'm like, it's not going to carry. I ended up carrying the other one down the street for them. It's like an 80-pound thing, and I'm like, so, and I gave it away, too. Like, just, anyhow. All right. It's been weird, but it's been after two.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.